Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. My name is Karen Deaton. My pronouns are she, her, hers. I've been a member of Prairie for about 15 years, and I currently serve as the chair of the Religious Education Committee. And also, I serve on the Landscape Committee and the Building Remodel Committee. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and an open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender, family structure, age, or abilities. During our virtual coffee hour at the end of the service, we invite visitors, guests, and returning friends to introduce yourselves so that we might get to know you better. We will also have joys and concerns during that time. We have some announcements to review. We're sharing our offering this quarter with the Street Pulse. Street Pulse is the organization and the name of the newspaper that provides income to Madison's homeless through direct newspaper sales. Coming up in the life of Prairie, Wednesday evening fun online with Holly is Wednesday at 6:30 on Zoom. All are welcome. This week will be storytelling time. Our next Prairie service will be next Saturday at 10 a.m. on Zoom, and it'll be a blessing of the animals. So that is going to be a fun time to meet each other's pets. On Sunday next weekend, we'll have a virtual coffee hour after the service at First. And 2 weeks from now, we have a couple of things to get on your calendar. One is the Spring Parish meeting on May 17th, Sunday at 11:15 a.m., we'll need to be sure to have quorum for that, so everybody come. That same day at 10 a.m., there will be a teen health workshop, which is sponsored by Prairie, open to everyone. It's designed by a group called Patch to help teens learn to navigate the healthcare system and advocate for themselves in it. If you have a teen who's part of our RE program, we're already expecting them. If there are teens from outside of Prairie that might be interested, we need to know that they're coming. So you can communicate with Holly about that. Today's service is based on Prairie's tradition of sharing book recommendations in a summer reads program. We're doing it early this year because we seem to have lots of time to read and the public libraries are not yet opened. So today we're going to celebrate reading together. Barbara Chatterton will read our opening words. And just a second, Barbara, I will.
Or maybe Renee will.
You're still muted, Barbara. There
that,
you're unmuted.
Okay.
Now
I'm sharing your, oops.
Good morning. The opening words today are by Mason Cooley. Reading gives us some place to go when we have to stay where we are.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm having a little technical difficulty here because my screen when I share is showing me the browser window and not the
You have to stop here. Can you stop sharing your screen right now? Because then we'll see Barb come up. There you go.
Okay, so we only went through this, Renee only reviewed this 85 times with me, so 86 hopefully will do the trick. So we're going to light the chalice now, and I invite you to light a chalice or candle of your own at home. Barbara, go ahead and read the chalice lighting words.
The chalice lighting is by Cynthia Landrum. Are apart, but we are together, offering our love, our commitment, our hope, and our prayers in service to one another in this world. It is a new way, but an old way that we come together today.
I'm going to light our chalice here. And now we're going to have a minute of silent meditation. It'll be begin and end with the sound of a chime. The next thing that we're going to do is the story for all ages, which Jesse is going to read. Mm-hmm. And they're gonna read it as soon as I get the slideshow going here.
And this story is a bit longer than we generally do, but we felt like it worked really well for this service, so we're doing it anyway.
Now we're gonna have the story.
Now, some stories are true, though some may not have happened. I'm gonna leave it up to you guys which one this is. Aunt Chip and the Great Triple Creek Dam Affair by Patricia Polatko. Absolutely everybody in Triple Creek loved their TV sets. No one could remember a time when there wasn't a TV in every home, nor could they remember when they weren't watching TV. Their TVs were always on, while they ate their meals, while they worked, while they played, while they slept. They even kept photos of their TVs on their mantles, along with all the pictures of their family members. Everybody loved their TVs, except Eli's Aunt Charlotte. Aunt Chip, as Eli called her, didn't even own a TV. As a matter of fact, she had never owned one. This made her suspect in the eyes of the townsfolk of Triple Creek, especially since she had upped and taken to her bed well over 50 years ago and vowed never to get out of it again. No one knew why, really, though there was some talk that it happened just about the time that huge TV tower was built over on Cedar and Oak. "I'm taken to my bed, ain't never getting up again," they say she shouted out of her window. "But there will be consequences. Mark my words, there will be consequences." And she settled into her eiderdown. Eli loved his Aunt Charlotte very much, in spite of her strange ways. He visited her almost every day. He especially loved when she would start into one of her great stories, like the one about the little kid in Holland who held back the sea by putting his thumb in the dike, or his favorite about a great white whale that lived in the deepest, darkest part of the ocean. "Where do all them stories come from, Aunt Chip?" he asked one day. "Some come out of thin air. Some come out of my dreams. Some come right out of books." "Books?" Eli thought for a long time. "How do you get a story from a book?" "Whatever do you mean, how, child?" "I mean, we use books all the time. They're all over town, but use them? You mean read them, don't you?" she asked, leaning closer to the boy. "Read? What's that?" Eli asked. "I knew it! I knew there'd be consequences," Aunt Chip hissed as she threw off her covers and, for the first time in 50 years, let one foot touch the floor. "Child, get me my clothes," she ordered. "How come you're getting up, Aunt Chip?" Eli asked. "'Cause I suspect there's a wrong that needs to be put right," she said, "and I've got to see what happened for myself." Eli and Aunt Chip walked into the center of town. Eli was right. Books were being well used for doorstops, to hold up roofs, to sit on, to eat off, to sleep under, to mend fences, to stuff potholes, to prop up sagging buildings, and even to shore up the dam. "Where has everyone gone?" Aunt Chip asked in stunned amazement. "There aren't any children playing. I don't hear talking or laughing." "Everyone's watching," Eli said with authority. "It's almost time for a cliffhanging episode of How the Dawn Churns." There have been consequences indeed, Aunt Chip said. Then, as they reached the corner of cedar and oak, Aunt Chip's eyes beheld the steel-strutted TV tower. She choked with tears. Take me home, boy. I've seen enough. That afternoon, they sat together in front of the fire, sipping very strong tea. Do you want to know what glory used to be on the corner of cedar and oak? What, Aunt Chip? Eli climbed up next to her. That's where the library used to be, she said. What's a library? Eli asked. It's a place where books used to be kept a long time ago, she answered wistfully. Why did they keep books in a building? Eli asked. They kept them there for folks to borrow and take home to read. Look, child. She went to a cabinet covered with cobwebs, took out a book, and opened it for him. Dust fluttered out of its pages. Now look at this. These are words. They tell about ideas, dreams, feelings. They take you to places far from here. They show you how to be fair and just, and sometimes they show you what happens when you're not. Books are a treasure. All you need is the key. The key? Eli asked. The key. Knowing these words and their meanings, she answered softly. It's called reading. But Aunt Chip, if the library had all those treasures, why would anyone take it away? Well, sir, she started, folks got so taken up by those TVs that they came to the library less and less. Pretty soon, folks started to forget what it was there for, all except the librarian. She was there all right, every single day. Folks started calling her mad for sitting in that empty old building day after day. Finally, they carried her away. Crazy as a March hare, everyone said. She was trying to stop the wrecking ball, but it still crashed into the walls and flattened the place. Then that giant TV tower came. Eli looked again at the open book they both held in their hands. I want to read, Aunt Chip. Can you teach me? Of course, child, she said, hugged him up. Now, Eli took to reading like a beaver takes to gnawing wood or a flea takes to a dirty little yellow dog. Within weeks, he could read just about everything, and he did. He read labels on cereal boxes, covers on canned goods at the store, road signs, all those things folks had memorized by their shapes. It wasn't long before his little classmates at school, where TV sets had long since replaced teachers, noticed that he knew what things said on labels, covers, and such. Look, Eli can hear things that we can't, Celeste Appleby said one day. Eli was reading a peanut butter cookie recipe from one of Aunt Chip's cookbooks. How come we can't hear what you're a-hearing when we look at this book? Hollis Lonsberry asked. I'm not a-hearing it, Eli said. I'm a-reading it. It's kind of like I can see it talking. Read more, the other children clamored, and each one grabbed a book from a nearby pothole and held it up in front of Eli. Eli read about princesses in a kingdom. He read about isosceles triangles, and he read about the sinking of the Titanic. At last, one boy announced, "We want to read too, Eli!" And they all cheered, "Yes!" That's when Eli took the children to Aunt Chip. All right," she said when they asked, "but I don't have enough books. We'll need more." That's when the children started borrowing books from all over town. They took them out of potholes, off fences, from the tops of roofs, out from under sagging buildings. They borrowed and borrowed. They got them from everywhere they could find them. Pretty soon, Aunt Chip's house echoed with small voices reading from Aesop's Fables and Grimm's Fairy Tales and stories by Hans Christian Andersen and Charles Dickens. Now those children couldn't get enough. One day, Eli and his friends were passing under a very tall wall made almost entirely out of books on the edge of town. The original wall had crumbled, and the townsfolk had rebuilt it. Eli was reading the spines of each book in the wall when his eyes caught the gold lettering of a lovely green one. "Help me up so I can reach it." He could hardly wait to touch it. The children stood on each other's shoulders until Eli's fingers could finally reach the book. "Moby Dick," he exclaimed as he pried it loose. Moby Dick sloshed out of the wall with a watery, wet, flunk. "Got it," he said. That was when they all heard a low, rumbling sound that grew louder and louder. They looked up and noticed a trickle of water coming out from where Moby Dick had been. The trickle got bigger and bigger. The rumbling got louder and louder. The ground under their feet started to shake, and they noticed that they were ankle deep in water. "Let's get to the bluff," Eli called out. When they reached the bluff and looked down, they saw it. The wall of books had become the new Triple Creek Dam, and it was bowing under the weight of the lake behind it. There was a thundering, watery roar. It exploded. The explosion sent the books flying straight up. They hurled so high into the air that they disappeared, clean out of sight. Tons of water surged down past Dead Man's Bluff and past the Bucket of Suds Saloon and was heading straight for the TV tower next to the bridge at Cedar and Oak Streets. The wall of water hit the tower with such force that it crumpled like tinfoil. When the children got into town, they saw all the grown-ups walking around, looking confused and dazed. "My TV went off for no reason at all," a woman said as she grasped the photo of her TV to her chest. "I can't live without my sports recap of the replay of Sunday's game," a hysterical man screamed as he collapsed with a serious case of the vapors. "Who could have done such a thing to our town?" the mayor called out in anguish, clutching his remote control. It's all my fault," Eli finally said above the din. Aunt Chip came and stood by his side. All I wanted to do was read this book." Eli held up the copy of Moby Dick. "Read? Did you say read?" the mayor asked as the townsfolk recoiled in disbelief. "Why, folks haven't done that around here since I can remember. If we were meant to read, we would have been born being able to do it. It must be bad if in doing it made the dam break and take out the TV tower." The crowd roared in agreement. "Just who taught you to read?" the mayor asked as he drew closer to Eli. Eli gestured to Aunt Chip. There was a collective gasp. "I knew it! I've heard stories about her," a voice said. "Crazy old coot," a man hissed. "She isn't crazy!" Eli screamed. All of the children came out from the crowd and surrounded Aunt Chip. "She's been teaching all of us to read. So we've been borrowing books from all over town," Eli said. "That's where they've been disappearing to," a mean-looking woman snapped. "You'll just have to put them all back." "They'll do nothing of the kind," Aunt Chip said with resolve. 50 years ago, I didn't have the strength to stand up to the city fathers, but now I do," she said as she locked hands with the children. Eli looked up at his Aunt Chip. "It was you. You were the librarian. That's why you took to bed. If and we were meant to read, surely there would have been a sign," the town soothsayer said as she gazed at the horizon. "Well, sir, exactly at that moment, all them books that had been blown out of the dam started to fall right out of the sky." "Look," a child said excitedly, "it's raining books." Sure enough, As the crowd looked skyward, down came a shower of books. Fairy tales, classics, dictionaries, encyclopedias, fiction, nonfiction, black books, brown books, green ones, red ones, leather-bound, canvas-backed, paperback, books, books, and more books. This is a miracle, the town soothsayer exclaimed. For the first time in years, the townsfolk were filled with the wonder that only a child knows. They embraced one another and danced with joy that such a glorious thing had happened to them. Clearly, it was a sign. But the miraculous event had taken their eyes off their TV screens long enough for them to finally see what their town had become. I had no idea, the mayor said sadly. I told them there'd be consequences, Aunt Chip said. But you can change all this. Get to reading again, Titus, she said to him. That's a start. But none of us knows how to read, a very large man said as he stepped out from the crowd. A little girl came up to him. I'll teach you, Daddy, she said quietly as she took his hand. Then, one by one, the townsfolk stepped forward, and one by one, they were joined by their children or grandchildren, a chorus of small voices saying the same thing over and over. I'll teach you, Mama. I'll teach you, Papa. Well, sir, Triple Creek wasn't the same after that glorious day. Folks were fixing up their houses and rebuilding, thanks to the books on remodeling and building that they were reading. They were planting gardens and parks because of books on gardening. They were sitting on their front porches again and talking to one another. Rousing conversations and laughter could be heard everywhere as folks talked about magazines, books, and newspapers. Understand, folks still had their TVs all right, but they were wise about what they watched and for how long. They had so much else to do, and people began moving to Triple Creek in droves. A Chinese restaurant, a theater, and a movie house that brought in movies from as far away as Moose Jaw Clear in the Upper Peninsula opened. Giovanni Gorgonzola, the world-renowned tenor, came and started a real opera company. Finally, a new school was built where the old one had stood, with real teachers and lots of books, including a 322-page book, Moby Dick. But the folks were most proud of their new library. And
it's frozen. There we go.
But folks were most proud of their new library. Do you know the ribbon-cutting ceremony attracted dignitaries from all over the country, including Jubilation T. Fogbound, the great senior senator from our great state of Michigan? But it was the mayor who escorted the new town librarian into the new building and sat her at her desk personally. She, once again, took her rightful place, which had been hers 50 years before. And that's the end.
Okay. Our book sharing. Yeah. Okay, so you don't need to write down, take notes on what people are saying, because there's a Google form online where you can enter information about the book you want to share and any other books that you want to share too. You can fill the form out more than once. And that'll be posted on the members area of the website. It has an additional area on the form where you can enter information about books that you have to share. So let's go ahead and start our book sharing. We have, it looks like we have about 25 people, and we have a little less than a minute a person. So keep it brief. Tell the name of the book, something about what you liked about it, a little bit about what it's about, but no spoilers. Okay. We'll start with young people because they will not be recorded and stored for future. raise your hand, either using the online button, if you know where that is, or by putting your hand up near your camera, and we'll unmute you and say your name so you know when to start, when you can start talking. So raise your hands if you have something to share.
Then there's an
unmute. I'm going to unmute Barbara. Barbara Chatterton, go ahead.
I had two very different books that I put on the Google Doc, and one is by a local Middleton author, Kathleen Ernst. She lives around here. She writes about Wisconsin, and she's got a murder mystery series and American Girl series, and I really love The Lightkeeper's Legacy by her, and it's about the Potawatomi Lighthouse. Another book, vastly different, is called Reading People Like a Book. It is a really good book. I read that 35 or 40 years ago, and I still look at it. It talks about body language and how to understand what people are thinking about. So those are my books.
And it looks like Brian has something to say, too. Go ahead, Brian.
Thank you. I put on the list the book called Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer. And interestingly, she is a former UW faculty member, so you'll read some stuff about the Arboretum. She's a member of the Potawatomi tribe, spent time up north in Wisconsin, also in New York State. And she connects Native stories to science about plants, and I just found it fascinating. It's great to read, but I really think would encourage you to find her on YouTube or audiobook because her voice is fantastic.
Thanks, Ron. Let's move now to Robin Proud. And you're not quite unmuted yet, Robin.
Okay.
You are unmuted. Go ahead.
Okay. The document is called In Our Prime, How Older Women Are Reinventing the Road Ahead, Susan J. Douglas. And I was interested in that because I just read this one, No Stopping Us Now, which is The Adventures of Older Women in American History by Gail Collins. So pointing out that a group that sometimes is not seen that much in history, how important it's been, and then how this group is uniquely positioned to go forward with a lot of different social issues. So they're both very, very readable and talk a lot about things like popular culture and how older women are portrayed in TV and movies and so on, as well as political and social issues. I'm sure I'll get a talk out of that.
Thank you, Robin. Next, we'll have Barbara Park. And go ahead, or we still need to get you unmuted here. Hold on. Okay, go, Barb.
Okay, I picked up this book by Neil deGrasse Tyson called Astrophysics for People in a Hurry. And you wouldn't think that you would be laughing out loud from a book on astrophysics, but indeed you do when you read this. It's got lots of good information, and he writes in a very clever way.
Thank you, Barb. Next, we'll do Peggy Small, and you can go, Barb.
Okay. I am still actually reading this book, but I'm a little over halfway done, and I really enjoyed it. It's called Everybody Wants to Go to Heaven, but Nobody Wants to Die, and it's about the history of bioethics in America, and it just kind of puts a lot of bioethical issues in the context of what was going on socially, politically, culturally, you know, at the time that we sort of made decisions, organ transplants, when that became available, what else was going on at that time. And I like it because it's actually really accessible, even if you don't know a lot about medicine or ethics. And it's, I mean, like any history book, there is some bias, but they do try to present a balanced view of most things. So it's a really nice, like, just general reference book.
Thank you. Next, we'll have Ann Pryor, and you're ready to roll.
Okay, so this is maybe the fifth in the series by Louise Penny, the Inspector Armand Gamache murder mysteries. I don't read murder mysteries, but these are just comfort books. They're super easy to read. It's a whole community. Everybody's super colorful and a little wacky. It's set in Canada, just outside of Montreal. So you get insights into Canadian and Francophone culture. It had curling in the second one, so that was fun. They're like dessert. Not the best written, a little repetitive in places in terms of the writing, but just fun, easy reads, very comforting for this kind of time.
Thank you, Anne. Next is Orange, and you can go ahead, Orange.
Well, I had to laugh when Barb said that the astrophysics book was for people in a hurry because I finally finished Bill Bryson's book about the body. If you know Bill Bryson as a humor writer, he also is a science writer, and this is called The Body, A Guide for Occupants, and it's very thick. I started it at the beginning of Shelter in Place, and I finally finished it because it's really pretty slow going, but you learn so much about the different body systems and how 50 or 100 years ago, we knew so little. And it seems like we don't know that much today, but we've come a long way. Although I will say that reading his chapter on the flu and pandemics was a little creepy because we now know what is possible. The other book that I've been recommending is Ann Patchett's latest book. I'm a big Ann Patchett fan and got to hear her speak last fall when The Dutch House had just come out. She was in Boston and Katrina and I went to see her together. But if you haven't discovered Ann Patchett, perhaps beyond Bel Canto, I really think she's a brilliant writer. I was also going to mention that I'm enjoying hearing everyone's recommendations. And since, like most people, we're watching a lot of TV these days, it would be fun to do a prayer service on favorite TV series and movies that we're watching while we're sheltering at home.
We talked about that actually a little bit before this service started, and the program committee has that. Renee recorded that as something that that can be queued up for later on in life.
I do realize that it's the antithesis of Jesse's wonderful children's story. Sorry about that.
No, it's fine. Yeah, and I considered putting in a disclaimer about how TV is fine.
Yeah.
Need them both.
Yeah, we need both. We need both. Next, I think we will move to Deesa Pence. Deesa, your camera's not on. I don't know if you want to turn it on. But you are unmuted now, so you can go ahead and talk.
Yeah, I've been trying to turn it on, and twice this has happened before, but only with Prairie. So I get it fixed and then I go back to work and the work is fine. And then I forget about it. And now this is the first time since I used it on Friday that it's blank again. I don't know how to turn it off. I've been clicking all the buttons that I can find.
We all sympathize.
Yeah.
Listen to you.
Anyway, I was, I have a bunch of books here and I have a library that's close and closed. And I thought this is a perfect time to share books because you can't get them through the library. And I was going to promote The Land Remembers by Ben Logan. And I'm doing that because I finished it and I had borrowed it from Gary Gates. So it kind of travels around. It's also a very nice comfort book. It's about a farm and its people is how it describes itself. And it's about a farm that's like southwest in Monroe area. And Gary says that he swears he has relatives that are related to the author or people who are living here. And it's about the time of the age where there were horse-drawn carriages or sleighs or the plows and talks about the land. And it's a very comfortable throwback kind of a book. So
neat.
There you go.
Thanks. Okay. I see that Mary has her hand up. So we'll go to Mary Mullen and you're unmuted. You can go ahead.
Well, here's my book. It's called The Deep River and it's by Carl Melantes. And it's a big book. It's a fat book about, I don't know, 600 or 700 pages. And I'm not quite through it, but Patty has also read it. We heard the, I have a friend who is a Finn. She has Finnish heritage and she's always talking about it. So I've gotten to know a lot about that. And this book is about Finns. It's a novel and it takes, it's about Finns in America. Well, first in Finland when Russia was trying to take it over. And then a lot of Finns emigrated to the United States. And a lot of them ended up in Wisconsin. But this book is about the Finns in the Northwest, Pacific Northwest, the loggers. You can probably see this big log here, possibly. Mm-hmm. And it's it tells about the brutal conditions in the Pacific Northwest when they were harvesting those trees that were bigger in diameter than a person was tall. And they were doing it by hand. So, and then it's also about labor organizing, the Wobblies, the IWW in the Pacific Northwest. And one of the main characters is a woman who is an organizer, kind of like Mother Jones was in the coal fields in the Eastern United States. And you might think it sounds dull and boring, but it's not at all. It has plenty of conversation almost on every page, and it follows relationships of the family that moved to the Pacific Northwest. And there's lots of romance, too. So Patty maybe wants to add a sentence or two about this book.
Okay, Patty.
Oh, well, I enjoyed it quite a lot. I read it in a few days, actually, because I just was so enthralled with it. So it was very good. I have a book, if I can talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that book is about immigration, people coming from Finland to the United States. And I like books that are about immigration. And so that's what this book is, only this is an iPad. And so my book that I was going to talk about is called The House Kitchen. And it's by Kathleen Grisham. And I had run out of physical books to read. And so I went to the library, virtual library, and looked for books. And so many of their ebooks are on hold already. You have to wait for them. So I went to just do a search, and I was listening to these young people talk about their love for historical fiction, because I like it too. And this young woman was recommending this book that I'm reading now, The House, The Kitchen House. And it's about a Irish girl that comes with her family from Ireland, and her family is killed, and she comes to live with the person who owns the ship. And so it takes place in the late 1700s, and it's her story that she lives on a plantation, and it's about slavery and the times there in Virginia, I think. Anyway, it's a very good book, and
okay.
I downloaded it. I had to buy it from Amazon and put it on my iPad.
So yeah. Can I add something here? I can play the harmonica for that song that we couldn't get that you couldn't get to come up. So, you know, at the end of the service, if we want to sing it, I can do that. I can.
Okay, thanks. Thank you. And we're approaching the time that I'm supposed to be ending the service, but we still hit. I'm not cutting anybody off. Katrina, you're up next, and you are ready to roll.
Hi. Well, I mostly read academic books, so I wasn't sure what I could share that other people might be interested in, but then I remembered that one of my friends, Lori, wrote a novel that I read last year. It's called The Lover, and it's a Sufi mystery. It's historical fiction, which I don't usually read, but I read it because she's a friend of mine, and I really enjoyed it. It takes place in 10th century Baghdad.
Wow.
And it is kind of a mystery, but it also has like interesting religious and spiritual elements to it. And she is a retired professor of Islamic history, so she put a lot of her research and knowledge into it.
Thanks.
She's also one of the founders of the mosque that I talked about last week.
Uh-huh. Neat. Thanks. Let's move to John.
Jesse has their hand up behind you.
Okay, we'll stick at my house for a second.
Okay. So I don't have any physical copies of these because I read them earlier in the year from the library, but I'm going to recommend a series within a series. I'm going to recommend the... So Discworld by Terry Pratchett has... It's a fictional universe that he writes a lot of stories and a lot of series in. And the one about the City Watch, the specific sub-series within that is what I'm going to recommend. It's really... really good.
They're funny.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Terry Pratchett, Discworld. So very funny, very kind, not necessarily realistic. Like Discworld is on a world that's, you know, flat on the backs of elephants, on the back of a turtle that's swimming through space. But very funny. It's about, it takes place in Ankh-Morpork, which is a kind of a big, one of the big cities on the disc. And it's about a guy called Sam Vimes, who's a police officer there and running around. So there's a lot of, like, you know, him running around solving crimes and stuff, and a lot great supporting cast. The language is beautiful. Very funny.
Yep.
Also very social justice-y, you know, like don't be bad to other people. Don't, you know, you know, he's very much like,
we're running out of time.
Yeah.
I'm not cutting anybody else off, but I'll cut Jesse off.
Rude.
Yeah, it was rude. Okay, John and Nancy, you've got the mic now.
Okay, so the book that we want to recommend, it's an audiobook that we both listen to. I just finished it this morning, actually. It's called Think Like a Freak. And it's based on the podcast called Freakonomics, which I also highly recommend. The people doing the podcast and who wrote the book, Stephen Levitt and Stephen Dubner. One is a professor of economics at the University of Chicago, and the other one is a journalist. And it's a collection of stories, and very compelling stories, and talking about how, some of them are talking about how people solved problems, and also how they use data to find out new solutions to those problems. So,
yeah, one of the very interesting stories was about how a long-standing record for eating hot dogs at the Coney Island annual competition was crushed by a skinny little Japanese guy through his personal research into how to eat hot dogs. And he annihilated. He actually doubled the previous record at one sitting. And most of the guys in the hot dog eating competition were these great big guys. And he comes in and mops the field with them. Yeah. Anyway, it's interesting. It's a very interesting study in how to basically fight your own confirmation bias and follow the data to get results. I really enjoyed that. And I just wanted to mention the book. You can rent books from the library, audiobooks, right now for free. There, of course, there's a lot of them are back ordered, but they also have quite a few that are available if anyone's interested in that. There's a couple of apps called, one's called Overdrive and one's called Libby. And you just need your library card to sign up for that. And you can borrow them for free.
Okay. Renee,
I unmute myself, so that.
And then I unmute. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so this is an oldie but a goodie. So, Pride and Prejudice, the one and only. I'm happy to lend out my copy. I've read it several times over the years, and it's good every single time I read it. And it's Elizabeth Bennet. I'm sure pretty much everyone knows the story. It's one of those books that's considered a classic, but you can actually read really easily. I've read some other classics that are really hard to get through, and the language is really hard, but this is just witty and fun. And like I said, I have a copy of it, so if you want to read it, you may. And then I also have, we have several sci-fi fantasy books here too, so I put that in the form, but we have some Terry Pratchett, we have Anne McCaffrey, So if you're someone that likes fantasy novels, and then we have a ton of children's books as well, like probably, I don't know, 100 at this point. We have a lot of children's books too. So anyone needs books for kids, you're welcome to contact me and kind of ask me what you're looking for. And I am happy to lend those out with contactless porch pickup. So.
Thank you. I'm going to go to Susan Hagstrom now, and you can go, Susan.
Oh, I did the same thing as Orange did. I recommended The Body by Bill Bryson.
Great. Very good book.
He writes so amusingly about history and the body and stuff like that. He has two other books, A Short History of Nearly Everything, and one on the house that as he wanders all over the place, and it's really quite interesting how he writes.
Neat. Thank you. For myself, I wanted to recommend The Parable of the Sower by Octavia Butler. It was written in the 1980s. It's a sci-fi fantasy book, post-apocalyptic, but the apocalypse is brought on by climate change and income inequality. So it's really relevant to today's times. And she seems to really have had a vision of the future. She has a presidential candidate in the book whose motto is Make America Great. if you can take something a little bit heavier, I think that one is excellent. Is there anybody else that I've missed? Kent. Unmuting. Renee, there we go.
Okay, I think I had muted myself earlier, so maybe it needed a double unmute or something. But anyhow, I had a couple. So I've been mostly getting books on Kindle because I'm trying to generally reduce my amount of physical stuff. So the first one is another pretty heavy one. It's called Deaths of Despair and the Future of Capitalism. And it's basically about how for the last 20 or 30 years in this country, we've been seeing this growing number of people who have been dying by suicide, drug overdose, or effects of long-term alcoholism. And some people have termed these deaths of despair. And so the book is sort of talking about the numbers of what's going on. And of course, part of it is that these deaths are really unevenly distributed across the population and that basically the increase has pretty much entirely been in working class white people in this country. And there has not been a corresponding increase in pretty much any other country. And so they talk about sort of what's going on and their theories of why we've had this and other countries haven't and what we might be able to do about it and so on. And then the other one I put on the list, yeah, I don't know how well people can see this, but anyhow, it's called How We Live Now. And it's a book about sort of how more and more people are not living in the sort of, you know, white picket fence, nuclear family house, you know, anything from more people living alone to people living in intergenerational households to co-housing to, you know, married people who are choosing to live separately and so on, and kind of exploring these different possibilities for how to live and kind of how people are trying to integrate these wider choices into their lives. So one thing too is I have tons of books. I mean, I don't know how many, I probably have 500 books or maybe more. And I'm actually trying to cut down and I'm trying to at least sort of get rid of some of the ones that I have already read. So I have many books that I would be happy to lend or give away. And I did put some information about the genres I have on the form. I'm generally trying to cut down the amount of physical stuff I have. So.
Well, that gives me a nice transition to reminding you all to fill out the Google form if you haven't yet. And if you have trouble with that, you can call me up. You know, obviously I have great technical skills, so I can help you with that or get Jesse to or something. I think we're gonna. Eileen, let me get to Eileen. Okay, Eileen.
Okay, I'll mention one really quickly. Some of the books on immigration reminded me. There's a more recent book on Swedish immigrants called Swede Hollow, and it's about people who lived in the Minneapolis Twin Cities area. And then we also, as many of you know, have hundreds of books that we also are very happy to give away. So you can just let me know what genre you like. I don't think I could write all the genre out. So there are many books. If people like physical books, let us know what you like and you can come and get it.
Great. Has everyone had a chance now? Okay. Yeah. This brings our service to a close. If you lit a chalice, you can extinguish your chalice, and Barbara Chatterton will read our closing words.
We are staying home. Love has never asked this of us before. We're staying home. This is our gift to humanity. Let us wish each other well.
Thank you.